CBS, Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Mars. Mars sample return. A series of headlines from NASA announcement. NASA Mars sample, which could contain evidence of life, will not return to Earth as initially planned. Live science. NASA is asking for help to return samples that could uncover life on Mars, flying. Or, NASA, samples could prove life on Mars, but we can't afford to bring them home. That's the London Telegraph. I go now to my favorite headline writer. This is Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. Mars sample return is a very complicated, long-winded story. And I recall it last when someone mentioned that we can't afford it. Bob, a very good evening to you. Can they afford it now? Good evening.
Good evening, John. No. This is garbage stuff going on here at NASA, and it's really garbage reporting. Every single headline you listed from the other news sources made a big deal about discovering life on Mars, and that's garbage. Perseverance on Mars, they say its primary mission is to discover life on Mars, but that's always been a lie. It's there to do geology. The odds of it finding any life, evidence of life on Mars is tiny, infinitesimal. So it would be nice if they found it, and they're looking for it always, but that's not its prime mission. Its prime mission is to learn the geology of Mars, the history of the planet, why it's the way it is, and how it formed, so that we can have a better understanding of it if we want to go there. That's what its goal is. So the NASA trope that they go to discover life, that any journalist that pushes that tells me they don't know what's going on. Secondly, this has to do with Mars sample return. The Perseverance is collecting core samples in Jezero Crater. And those core samples are intended to be returned to Earth for study. And so from the beginning of the Perseverance project, the idea was that there would be a sample return mission later that would pick up the core samples and bring them back to Earth. NASA, though, designed that sample return mission in the, if you were trying to make it complicated, NASA decided to, that wasn't complicated enough, they were going to double the complexity. For example, they've teamed up the European Space Agency. European Space Agency is going to provide what they call the return orbiter. ESA is going to launch a rocket with an orbiter, a Mars orbiter that will be in Martian orbit. And what will happen is NASA is going to send a ascent spacecraft to the Martian surface and then somehow grab the samples and put them into an ascent vehicle, which will then go up into orbit, dock with the European orbiter, transfer the sample cores into a sample return capsule, which will then be sent back to Earth to be recovered. The complexity is because, once again, you want to keep these samples from getting contaminated, so the constant transferring them from one place to the other is not a good thing, but that's how they want to do it. And NASA originally asked Lockheed Martin to build this lander and ascent capsule, ascent rocket. Well, Lockheed Martin doesn't really have any major experience in this area. They were also going to use two helicopters on the surface to grab the core samples and bring them back into the ascent capsule, vehicle. It was all very complicated and very confused, and it also the management arrangement was very complex and very confused. And so there were several independent reviews that said this project's not going to happen, as you say. It's going to take at least till 2040 to get those samples back, and it's going to cost probably more than $11 billion to do so. And as Bill Nelson, NASA's administrator, said yesterday when they earlier this week, when they announced that they are responding to those independent reviews of this program, which are all said there's big problems with it. Bill Nelson said the bottom line is an $11 billion budget is too expensive, and a 2040 return date is too far away. So what does NASA propose to do? Well, NASA is not proposing to do much of anything. It has made one decision. It has decided not to ask Lockheed Martin to build that descent lander and ascent vehicle to bring the sample up. Instead, it is going to put that out to bid to the general commercial community. And, of course, we obviously know why, because there is one company with one spacecraft that's being developed right now that is ideal for doing exactly this, and that's SpaceX's Starship. So we're all really expecting that Starship, SpaceX is going to bid on this and propose Starship to be the descent vehicle and the ascent vehicle for bringing the samples up from Mars. Starship is big enough that it could carry lots of payload, which means if you wanted to put helicopters on it, you could. You could have lots of flexibility in how you'll design the recovery system when you do it. So that's what NASA is doing. They're going to allow other companies to bid on the ascent-descent vehicle, and we're hoping SpaceX will do that. The problem is that NASA refused to revise the management plan. We still have multiple mini-projects working in line with each other with no central management. It's still depending on the European orbiter, even though Europe's experience in this is somewhat limited. They've done orbiters, but this is much more complicated than that, a sample capsule coming back. And so I don't expect this is going to save much money. The one place they're going to save money, John, is that they've decided they will cease operations of Perseverance in 2028. That we don't have to pay for any scientists or engineers to run the rover. They will bring it back to the floor of Jezero Crater, where they'll put it into stasis until the sample return lander arrives, which means it could be sitting on the Martian surface doing nothing for like a dozen years. But that'll save money because they won't be doing any further exploration on Mars. They're going to truncate that probably. Overall, I don't see this as causing us to save any money. The program is still as complicated as before. It still has a lot of loose ends. It's still very confused. It's still very vague, unfinished, and at a very late date, too. So how those samples come back remains unknown. I still think the more likely thing will happen is that SpaceX will get Starship functioning, it'll get it running, it'll send missions to Mars, and at some point, as an aside thing, they'll go off and send a mission to Mars to pick up the samples on their own to bring them back to Earth, do NASA a favor in this matter.
Bob, I've recently had a conversation with Dante Loretta, who is the PI on OSIRIS-REx, the sample return from the asteroid Bennu. And what I learned is that NASA has a protocol that goes over many years, can be up to 20 years, from when you first submit the proposal to the many rejections along the way. You keep refitting it. And it has criteria that you generally follow. One is sampleability. What are you going after? What is deliverability? That would be your methodology. Another is cost, a big one. And another is management. What you're describing to me sounds as if they didn't follow that protocol for this one mission because it's diffuse. It's several management, several costs.
Yep.
So there was no PI driving it, and there was no there was no checks and balances along the way because NASA reviews can be very severe when you haven't met your goals by such and such a year. It sounds like they skipped all that.
All right. The difference between Lorente's project, OSIRIS-REx, and Mars sample return is that OSIRIS-REx was a project that was put together by scientists that had to compete for a NASA approval against others. And therefore, it was heavy competition and very strict standards by NASA. And then NASA approves the programs to do that propose the best thing and can do the job and have worked out all the kinks. So that's OSIRIS-REx. That's most planetary projects. They're proposed by scientists who work it out and so to meet NASA's criteria and win in competition. Mars sample return was none of that. Mars sample return is a NASA political project put together during the Obama administration to use Perseverance to get core samples back. But it was never under any kind of competitive bidding project to anyone on how to do it. Essentially, NASA's management decided, worked out its plan, and it did it in conjunction with the European Space Agency. But that meant this was the case that the wolves were guarding the hen house. The management at NASA worked out the plan. Nobody ever reviewed their work, really. And now we're reviewing it, but they're very resistant, it seems, to really changing what they're doing. There are political costs. If to simplify this project, you get rid of the European orbiter, You got to deal with the fact that you're then insulting the European Space Agency. You know, that's a political problem. If Starship is chosen to be the lander and ascent vehicle, at that point the question immediately comes up, why bother docking with an orbiter? If you can refuel Starship to land on Mars and then come back up, you can certainly refuel it to get it back to Earth and then land with the capsule inside already ready to go from Mars. That reduces the contamination risks, it simplifies the project, and it reduces the cost. But to do that, you're going to have to eliminate the European component in this, and there's political there, so NASA's not going to do it.
There might be something to the fact that Starship wasn't so practical a solution when they started this project many years ago.
And that's possibly a component to this, John, but as you pointed out, the way this project was designed violated all the basics of how planetary programs have run. Why NASA's planetary program runs so well. This project was designed like SLS, like Orion, like Webb, as a political project that was approved from the top and did not go through the stringent criteria and competition for approval.
All right, let's
go. That's why it's the way it is.
Let's go to On the Top. There's a hole in my roof. What happened, Bob?
Yes, this is that story from a few weeks ago. A piece of space junk had crashed through a Florida house. Barely, actually came very close to hitting a kid that was living, that was inside at the time. The owner of the house, his name is Alejandro Otero, tried to contact NASA because it looked to him like the piece, it was about a 2-pound piece of material, a single thing, piece of material. He said to NASA, he called NASA, what are you going to do about this? Called NASA, wrote NASA, they didn't respond. He only finally got a response when he went public on Twitter, on X. And so then NASA responded. So NASA came, they got the object, and now this week they've admitted that the object is a piece of their hardware that was part of a cargo pallet that in 21 NASA dumped from ISS with the assumption it was going to burn up in the atmosphere. It didn't all burn up. They say it's a stanchion from the flight support equipment used to mount the batteries on the cargo pallet. Like a bar, a metal piece, that like scaffolding piece. It survived landing. It crashed to the roof. And so they've now admitted this is their piece of material, space junk, that they ejected from ISS that landed on Mr. Otero's roof. Now, nowhere in the admission by NASA do they say they're going to pay him anything, but he obviously, NASA's, by outer space treaty law, the U.S. is liable for this damage and NASA is liable for it. And so I say that Mr. Otero should get a lawyer very quickly and begin negotiations with NASA because they owe him repairs here, question.
What I like about this, Bob, is that it reminds that when those Chinese rockets come tumbling down, they can hit anything.
That's right. In NASA's case, NASA tries very hard not to hit things. We in the U.S. and in the West generally try not to hit things. It happens. So when it happens, you have to take responsibility. I'm expecting NASA to do something along those lines. China doesn't care.
Two-pound object can hit a house, a 40-ton object. All right, let's go on to SpaceX setting a record. How big, Bob?
Yeah, this is good news. SpaceX, as we all know from almost a decade now, has been reusing the first stages on the Falcon 9 rocket repeatedly. And they've been upgrading that first stage as they go to a point where they say the first stages they're using now could easily fly 20, maybe 30 times. But up to now, none of them have flown more than 19 times. They've got two that have flown 19 times and I think one that has flown 18 times, and then a few at 17. This past weekend, they launched another 23 Starlink satellites, and the Falcon 9 that launched with a first stage completing its 20th flight, a new record. And it landed successfully, so it could fly again. Obviously, when it gets to this number of flights, I'm sure SpaceX will put it through a much more stringent inspection afterward. But based on their experience, I would not be surprised if it continues to fly additional times. As I noted on Behind the Black, SpaceX, its fleet of first stages for the Falcon 9 are beginning to have a comparable number of flights that match the shuttle fleet from NASA. I posted the number of flights of all the shuttles, and you look at this and you see that, you know, given time, SpaceX is going to have more launches of its first stages than the shuttles ever did. Now, of course, the shuttles were manned. These first stages are not manned. In the end, they're eventually expendable. But NASA, once again, SpaceX is demonstrating reusability was always a viable option for rockets.
We're going exploring. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.